In the robotics world, success depends on more than a unique idea. Reinventing the wheel. Developing technology already available in the market not only creates bottlenecks, but it also sends costs spiraling. So how can you streamline production and kickstart revenues? By integrating off-the-shelf technology. CG Connect, a hardware-agnostic plug-and-play microcellular modem, offers fast, secure access to the cloud. CG Connect links any uncrewed vehicle to Cloud Ground Control's cloud-based drone fleet management platform. Focus on building core technology by leveraging CG Connect for a cost-effective, scalable solution to fast-track market readiness. To learn more, visit cloudgroundcontrol.com. Welcome to episode 115 of the Robot Report podcast. I'm your host, Steve Crow, editorial director of the Robot Report. Thank you, folks, for tuning in to the program. Joined, as always, by Mr. Mike Oitzman. What's going on, man?
Hey, Steve. Well, we're recording this a little bit early this week, so I'm getting packed and getting ready to head out to Detroit to automate. And I know you are as well, so we're planning to walk the show and looking forward to meeting everybody there. And hey, we said it before, I'm going to pitch it one more time, that we got plenty of these great fan stickers for your laptop. So if anybody's a fan of the show, stop us. I'd love to give you a sticker that you listen to the Robot Report podcast.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing everybody there. Another big show for us, Mike. Later on, we'll play our interview with Brett Adcock. He's the CEO and co-founder of Figure. Of course, Figure announced this week their $70 million Series A. They're one of several new companies, Mike, developing humanoid robots. So again, Brett Adcock, he's their co-founder. Very successful young guy. He founded Archer, which is working on electric vertical takeoff and landing aircraft. He also founded and sold Vettery, which is a machine learning-based talent marketplace. This is probably his toughest challenge of all, I would imagine, doing something that no one's really ever done yet. Certainly agility robotics, which we'll also talk about in a minute here, is probably the furthest along, but a lot of momentum, Mike, around humanoids at the moment.
Absolutely. And it just seems like there's been lots of amazing news in the last couple of weeks, and we got a handful of things to talk about today. So it's pretty wild. And I'm just looking forward to watching this market explode as things go forward.
Yep. But before we get to that, we do have to remind you, our call for presentations is open for Robo Business. That's our show that we run October 18th and 19th out in Santa Clara, California. If you made it to the Robotics Summit and Expo a couple of weeks ago, if you spoke there, if you exhibited there, thank you. But we're doing it pretty much the same thing. There'll be some tweaks to the content in the conference side of things out on the West Coast, but you can go to robobusiness.com. You can see all the tracks, the show floor, everything that we'll be doing, and we'll be updating that website as we go. We'll also be having a niche focus on field robotic systems at Robo Business. So any robot that operates outdoors and dynamic outdoor environments, that will be our special focus for the West Coast show. But again, Robo Business, October 18th, 19th, out in Santa Clara, California. We'd love to have you all involved. You can go to robobusiness.com to submit a presentation. I think the deadline is June 16th, so quickly approaching. But again, we'd love to see you all there. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to Mike or myself, and we're happy to answer anything for you. But on to the news this week, Mike, and we have you folks covered with our network of robotics sites. You can check us out at the Robot Report, Mobile Robot Guide, Robotics Business Review, and Collaborative Robotics Trends. So we're recording this just a couple of days after the last episode. So not too many crazy stories that have happened, Mike, but what broke this morning, Monday, May 22nd, somewhat of a major surprise and a major move, I think you and I both agree on this, is that Melanie Weiss has joined Agility Robotics as their chief technology officer today. Of course, Melanie, founder of Fetch Robotics, worked at Willow Garage for a number of years. Now joining Agility Robotics, which is trying to deploy their digit humanoid into warehouses, fleets of them inside of warehouses. And I think that's the key, right? Melanie's quite familiar with robots operating in warehouses with her days developing AMRs for the logistics market. So seems to be a pretty decent fit here.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it comes as a surprise for many of us. We talked about this at length this morning, but when you really sit down and think about it, I'm super excited for agility to bring Melanie on board. I think the world of Melanie, she's been involved with autonomous mobile robots since the beginning, since the earliest days here. She totally understands everything about perception and you know, doing work, you know, with mobile robots. And then, of course, one of the big markets that they took Fetch into was warehousing and logistics. And we know that's one of the primary applications that agility is going after. So there's so many things here. Just makes perfect sense for her to bring her expertise and experience and to agility to help them with the commercialization of the product.
So we're hoping to bump into her this week to talk to her and just learn a little bit more about what she'll specifically be doing. But when in the announcement this morning from Agility Robotics, it said that Melanie will be working on software and technology systems for deploying fleets of digits in warehouses all over the country. So again, I don't have any additional information on this, but to me, that seems like, you know, what I'm honing in on in that sentence is deploying fleets, right? So again, is she helping connect the digit software to some warehouse management systems? You know, I'm not really sure. And another interesting thing to note here is that Jonathan Hurst, who keynoted the Robotics Summit a couple of weeks ago, he previously held the title of CTO, and he's going to be transitioning his role into the Chief Robotics Officer. And of course, what they're doing now is all based off of his research at Oregon State University. So he's going to move a little bit more closely to what he likes to do, I think, or what he does on a regular basis anyway. And that's really setting the R&D roadmap for agility and digit and whatever else it is that they're working on down the line. But yeah, interesting. You know, it's certainly gives them a boost of confidence is probably not the right word, or legitimizes them, but again, nobody's done this before. So they have some tremendous people working on the engineering side for the bipedal locomotion and the mobile manipulation, like you mentioned to me this morning, which Melanie also has expertise in. Did they have that connection, that deep connection with the warehousing side? I'm not sure that they had that, but now they certainly do now.
Yeah, well, and of course, Melanie is really well connected and has a huge network. So again, on the commercialization side of this, is they begin to build on their roadmap everything else that needs to come around the digit product to make it fully functional. Again, Melanie's done that multiple times now, and so bringing her in as a veteran, she's a veteran now with lots of hard learned lessons to make this happen. I think it's a brilliant move on this side of agility, and again, probably a very challenging opportunity for Melanie as she's coming back for her polar explorations. I can't wait to talk to her about what she did in the last 6 months during her time off. I'm sure she's got some great stories to tell.
Yeah, so they sold Fetch Robotics, which she co-founded in 2015, sold that in 2021, well, almost 2 years ago already, to Zebra Technologies for $290 million. So a nice win there for them in the AMR market. But as I wrote my story, she was, and I don't know if this was up until today or, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I'm not really sure, but she was serving as Zebra's VP and GM of robotics automation. That was never the long-term plan, as is normally the case when these acquisitions happen. The co-founders typically stick around for a year, 2 years, something like that, until they find their next endeavor. But this is interesting on another level. And I said this to you and Brianna this morning kind of facetiously, but, you know, Melanie coming from the wheeled side of robotics versus agility robotics and digit with the two legs, there's that whole dichotomy, right? There's people have different theories. And I know agility's theory is that the world was not built for wheels, right? That it was built for the way that we're designing things in this world is for humans with two legs, right? So it's just kind of a funny anecdote, nothing more than that, that, you know, here you have this classically trained wheeled AMR expert, one of the best to ever do it, now jumping ship to the other side of the spectrum and working on legged robots, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, well, I think it makes perfect sense. If I was Melanie and I wanted to move on to the next big challenge, she knows how to do wheeled robots. Why not go to the next big frontier, which is legged robots? And again, all the challenges that they still have in front of them to make it function. We know that as we talked about, and we're going to talk about in the next part of this, the next story, you know, this market's starting to open up. It's an exciting place to be at the moment for if you're a robot assistant. So that's why there's a lot of investment going in this direction, and everybody's following it, as are we, right?
Yeah, and the last thing here, I remember having a conversation with Jonathan Hurst and Damian Shelton, the other co-founder, one of the other co-founders at Agility Robotics back at ProMat a couple of months ago now. And I remember John, I think it was Jonathan, who was saying he's not sure people realize how big their company is now. And I think at the time, I could be wrong about this, but it was upwards of 200 people, I think, work there now. And I've been following them ever since they, you know, emerged as a company. And he was saying that people still kind of think that they're this rinky-dink startup and that it's just not true anymore, right? So bringing on somebody like her really points to that. They raised Agility $150 million in their Series B in April of 2022. So they're a legitimate player now, leading the space when it comes to developing these humanoid robots for something other than R&D inside of a lab, right? So another company, Mike, moving on here, that's trying to do that is Figure. And again, we'll play our interview with Brett Adcock. He's their CEO and co-founder here in a few minutes. But they came out this week and announced that they raised a $70 million Series A to support the commercialization of their Figure One humanoid robot. So we haven't seen it yet. They've put out some pretty interesting teasers of what they envision a humanoid robot to look like. But they put together a pretty talented team, including Brett. And but interesting times. But again, we have haven't seen anything from them yet. But it looks like they're going after warehousing as well at some point in the next couple of years for their initial tasks that they're trying to automate with a humanoid.
Yeah, and again, it's interesting that warehousing is the one big low-hanging fruit opportunity, so to speak. That you know, robotics still plenty of opportunity to help solve these problems, and you know, doing it with legged robots that are about the same size as the average human, right? The workspace is already built for humans. And I think that's really, you know, the challenge is now is how to make them function in that space. And, you know, the interesting part about the conversation we had with Brett was about hands and hand design and how critical that is, you know, to the future of this space, probably more than leg design right now, right?
Yeah, that's what I thought was interesting. I think, and again, I'm not sure I have his words exactly right, but I think he was saying, or certainly was trying to control, you know, relay to us that he feels bipedal locomotion was solved, right? Is that how you took that from him?
Yep.
And he was really saying even the cost he doesn't believe is a problem once they figure out all the actuation and all the different joints so they can 3D print a lot of these things to help lower the cost of things. But yeah, he was saying the real issue or one of the real challenges is around the manipulation. And so they got a five-fingered hand that they're working on. I think I brought up Shadow's robot hand and he was saying how expensive that was. But I thought that was interesting to hear him say that he thought manipulation is his biggest challenge. So I don't want to dive too much more into this because I think it was an interesting conversation. Again, they're pretty early on with where they are in terms of development of their Figure one or Figure 01 humanoid robot. But again, as we mentioned off the top of the show, a pretty interesting time for humanoids. I feel like we kind of get there every so often, but the humanoids of past have only really been developed for R&D purposes, right? Boston Dynamics has been very clear with that. Now Figure is one of a handful of companies, at least, and Mike, I know you're tracking this, but one of at least a handful of companies that are actually trying to develop humanoids to do useful work. So what we get into here with Brett is the challenges of manipulation and locomotion, the financial part of things. Why is he going after this? Why is he trying to tackle this? They put together an incredible team. So here's our conversation with Brett Adcock. He's the CEO and co-founder of Figure. All right. So I don't know where you want to start, but obviously big news, right? Series A, congrats on that. 70 mil, it's pretty good. I'm sure that's going to go a long way, but where do you want to start? I mean, I think I have a pretty good idea what you guys are trying to do. You want to start with like where you guys are at now, you know, like how far along is the robot? You want to start there?
So yeah, we actually are just having our 1 year anniversary like next week. So the company's been around now for a year. As a summary, you know, our vision is to deploy humanoid robots into the world to help automate physical labor. And we believe that like the key enabling technologies are here today to do this. And so we've assembled a team now of 50 people that have a lot of experience in mechanical robotic design, controls, embedded software, electronic areas, autonomy. And we've completed our full scale humanoid design of our first, you know, of our first version design. We call it the alpha build in December. That design is fully integrated.
I read the TechCrunch piece. Was there something in there, but it was like flipping people off. Is that what I read? I forget.
Yeah. We have a 5-finger hand on the robot, and we brought up our first hand a couple weeks ago, and you know, we're like a weekend, you know, moving the hand, doing all kinds of grass types. And we had a big potential client in the office, and we're moving the hand, like, you know, in a fist and opening it up. And like the middle finger had some friction issue with it. So like when it closed the hand, the middle finger just stood out there, and we're basically just sitting there flicking off this client for 3 minutes. And it was just, I was like, man, this is almost worse than demo not working. Yeah. And luckily it was like, oh yeah, it was fine. But it was just kind of funny.
What do you think is, I mean, there's so many technical challenges here, right? And I know this is unlike, obviously you're very successful, but this is unlike anything I think you probably ever built, right? I guess just take me through from your perspective, I guess the biggest technical challenges, you know, or maybe your sort of philosophy to how you're bringing it all together.
But yeah, I think the technical challenges really need to be thought about on like what time horizon and as it relates to like what the goal of the humanoid is like to do. So I think it's like there's like these near term, almost like short horizon things that are on our risk schedule, and there's like more of these like long term things that, you know, how do we get a large fleet of robots to operate in households autonomously at high reliability states, at high safety states, at low cost states. That's like much further out. So there's kind of these like, you know, sub 5-year challenges, and there's kind of like these 5-year and beyond challenges in our roadmap. We look at it as it's important to get a commercially viable humanoid into market as fast as possible. That'll help us build this AI data engine flywheel. It will help us get manufacturing volumes up, which will help with costs, and it will help us learn from the customers what's working and what's not working. It's a really good signal for the business to get into revenue as fast as we can. So for us, you know, the analogy for us is like, if we're like in the autonomous driving vehicle space, we want to be doing highway driving and charging people money. And then we want to be doing software updates to bridge from there into a city driving. And this is really hard. Like city driving for us equivalent is probably like in the home doing, you know, housework. That's probably an order of magnitude, maybe two orders of magnitude harder than doing some areas of like warehouse work, retail work. Like moving boxes around a facility or moving bins is much more tractable from an engineering perspective for us to do than some of the stuff in the household. So our, you know, on our horizon, we obviously have like the actuator, like the, you know, the hardware quality and reliability is always hard. The actuators are very complicated systems. We have torque control at every joint. So like those are always just a very difficult area to do reliably. It's not hard to do on like on a one-off basis and prototype it and demonstrate that, but to do that across a full mission in full days, 7 days a week is going to be hard. Hand hardware and control software on hands is tough. I think there's been a lot of great work in prosthetics, in other industries, but like hands have always been really tough. We have a 5-fingered hand that is probably between this like, okay, very, very like high DOF hand that can do everything in the world, and like this, like, you know, this claw, like 2-DOF claw that can't do, you know, much of anything. So I think our hands kind of like sits and maybe in the middle, maybe like even closer, you know, to more, hopefully over time, like simpler here. But like, yeah, I think hands are going to be just tough to do, and it's almost like a reliability thing. How do we make them reliable to do from a hardware perspective? It's the hands alone almost are as hard as the rest of the system.
Are you guys building the hand yourself? Like, you're not using, I know Shadow Robot, for example, has a very probably similar hand, but you guys are building everything for the most part.
I think the Shadow Robot's like a 24 DOF hand. It's way too complicated. It's way too unreliable and it's way too expensive. So I think I heard a rumor that it was going down like every 8 minutes when OpenAI was trying to solve the Rubik's Cube problem. So we really need something very reliable and cost effective and that integrates really well with our system. So we haven't found anything today that is like that hand can be well integrated into our system and be used over the next 5 years in applications. Like, just doesn't exist. We've seen some prosthetics and hobby grade hands that are out there and we've demoed them, but they're certainly not, they're like 3D printed. The motors are bought out of China. They're just like, they're under actuated. Like, they're have the right force or tactile sensing that we would need. So like, it's just, there's a laundry list of reasons why we haven't been able to find good, effective, say, actuators on the hardware side, or even like hands off of the end infectors. Item manipulation is another area for us. That's really, really quite tricky. So it's going to be a hard thing to do in areas that are more constrained and areas that are more known of what we're going to be touching. It makes it the problem much more tractable. So putting a humanoid in a home where it's very unstructured, we can't control that. And there's a lot more variability. That's always just much harder from a manipulation perspective. Speed's another thing, like the robot versus the human speed is just tough. Humanoids have traditionally been very slow. It's just a hard thing to do reliably in real operations. And then I think lastly, maybe like fall survivability, just like is also another one that's like, we want this humanoids to be able to fall down and get up without breaking, you know, certain falls that we feel like should not result in injury. Yeah, I think there's a laundry list of things, obviously, that we're working through. Those are like all the known knowns. All those known knowns seem solvable in like a 2 to 4 or 5 year timeline. I don't think any of those, given where we're going to go to market at, would be intractable. I think getting to a point where you're working on the nines and you're making the nines of reliability work is probably going to be an area that we're hopefully spending a lot of time on the next 2 to 4 years and working through those. I think if that's the case, I think those can be solved in certain areas of warehousing and logistics and manufacturing to a point where the robot can be really successful. I kind of wake up every day and saying like, why is this not already here? We're like, walking's been solved. Autonomous, you know, algorithms and hardware that are, edge computing that basically like, it's really good, I would say, overall. We have applications in the real world that are not like, okay, you need to touch 10,000 things that you might not know until you look at it. Like, that's not the case. Like, it's very, you know, structured environment, like a lot lower variability than you would expect in a lot of other areas. And then we know how to walk a robot from a locomotion perspective. I mean, heck, like BD is doing front flips. Mm-hmm. So not the case that humanoids are hard to walk anymore. I mean, you can really walk a humanoid. Mm-hmm. Well. So like, yeah, the question we get back to is like, why is this not already here today?
Mm-hmm. I think the manipulation is take out the humanoid form factor, right? If you just take any sort of robot arm, there's not a universal gripper that can grip, you know, and I know some gripper companies that have had to pivot their business model to become more software plays because, you know, their gripper is only, and it's nothing that's a five-fingered gripper, right? It's these soft grippers or the two-fingered mechanical grippers.
It's
a challenge.
It's certainly hard, but like, if we have a lot of capital behind us here and we have like probably the world's best team here today, not being able to make a 6 DOF hand with electric motors work reliably to pick things up is just not a future I feel like I want to wake up to. We have rockets landing by themselves. We have turbofan engines that are designed to 1 × 10⁻⁹ in terms of hours of reliability per catastrophic event. We have very complicated mechanical systems in the world that work in high reliability states. I think if you look in the warehouse and other areas, like we know everything we would need to be touching and manipulating. So there's a lot of learned areas here you can do offline. Like ahead of time, meaning we're going to know what items we're going to be touching that we can do a lot of policy training on at the office.
Right.
Not a situation where we walk in and we see a cup and we don't know how to grab it, or we don't know the right strength to grab it and we're going to crush it. So yeah, I would say like that doesn't seem like an area that is intractable for the world to be solving in 2023. Like,
but
that's
I think you also make a good point, right? There's, you know, we all know the other humanoids that have been out there, Boston Dynamics, you know, probably the most sophisticated one. They've never tried to productize that, right?
And they've never worked on manipulation really, or to that degree or any of that stuff. So I think, they've basically been Atlas has been a research project the whole time. So I think
the only one that's really commercialized something yet is, and you and I talked about this before, I think is Agility Robotics, right? And they're going after a very specific use case right now to start, but other than them.
Yeah.
Now there's several others now, right? But I don't think anyone's really tried to do it until now.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I think there's like, who's had like an order of like $100 million with like a really good team, call it like 30 to 50 people that really know what they're doing and have had, you know, 2 to 4 years to make this work. And it wouldn't have worked 10 years ago. We didn't have the battery energy density. We didn't have the motion controllers. We didn't have the algorithms on the AI side and compute to do this. Like, it's going to happen now. And there really hasn't been a commercial group with that kind of, you know, definition really attacking this market. I know obviously Optimus is out there now and Agility is doing their thing, but like we think that we're like one of the very few groups in the world that have ever, you know, that have been capitalized correctly with the right team to go try to do this.
So I don't know how many folks you have from Boston Dynamics. Jerry's a legend when it comes to humanoid robots and IHMC. Where else do you got people from? I mean, all over the place. Google, looks like Apple and Tesla, and you know, all over the place. So,
well, yeah, I mean, Brett, I look at this as where the AMR market was back in 2014, right? So it's almost a decade ago that, you know, suddenly there was the enabling technologies came together and there was an explosion of companies. And now, you know, that wheeled market has just, you know, matured like crazy. As you said, all these enabling pieces now have matured to the point that you can actually feasibly build functional systems. So that's why I'm excited, you know, to understand exactly, you know, what's the state of the market today and you know, sort of roadmap forward here, you know, to feasibly make this happen. And as we said, you know, even Agility's been on a 10-year course, right?
And I think their whole course has been the locomotion part of it.
Yeah, they got the locomotion figured out and then added the rest of it to it, right? So it just built up from the ground up, literally, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been a lot of groups that have been out here trying this. I think speed is really important. Like, if you're going to look at the winners of this, they're going to be moving extremely fast. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of groups out here that have been around for 5 or 10 years, and they're making progress, but I think it's been too slow, to be honest. I think our view is that we want to be able to, by end of year this year, you know, maybe early next year, be able to demonstrate end-to-end commercial viability in our facility here in California. And then we would like to, within the next 24 months, be in a pilot with a commercial group and actually demonstrating this in the real world. Like, that's our roadmap. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, if we can't pilot in a small quantity with a group and be successful, then this won't work. And if we can't do this in our lab in a very controlled environment, then it won't work in the pilot. So all the energy we have at Figure is going into, can we pilot this in our lab at human speeds and introduce a lot of variability into the environment, into the sim, and make this work? And so we have not seen any of that in anywhere in humanoid space the last century. We have seen demonstrations, parkours, almost this like kind of like more entertainment style work. We haven't seen like boring work performed by humanoid robots. And Figure's only goal is to commercialize and ship product. So we're extremely focused on that end goal right now. Mm-hmm. I think it's necessary for the humanoid space to get, you called it like, you know, the AMR space got really hot all of a sudden. Once a humanoid group can demonstrate a commercial viability or get close enough where you see like, okay, now you need to work through these like 20 things and you can probably be there, then I think the space will absolutely explode. Cause you think the transportation market's big, look at the labor market. It's just a gigantic business. And you have this general purpose interface that can basically build an AI data engine onto. So the robot theoretically can just do anything a human can. And most of the world as of today that humans do work in are not automated are hard to automate. It's not like, you know, the warehouses and automotive groups, like they've automated almost everything that can be done with simple robots, and now hired DAF, more complex robots that are, you know, have some sort of like ultimately some semantic understanding of the world. I think that's the next phase. I think it'll be a very, very important businesses the next 10 years.
Yeah. Can I challenge you on one question here? And you don't have to answer this today, but it, you know, Steve and I debated a lot the topic that Elon made the point with Optimus that it was going to be a $20,000 street price for that robot at some point in the future. Now, it's debatable whether that's a decade from now or, you know, longer than that. But, you know, when you start talking about degrees of freedom, every degree of freedom is an actuator and a joint in a complex mechanical manufacturing piece. And so obviously humanoids are going to have a lot of degrees of freedom between the hands. Yeah, I mean, a hand today probably costs $20,000, right, to build. And again, I've been involved intimately with the AMR market. You know, AMRs today are $40,000 with a $20,000 bill of materials, right? And think about how simple those machines are today. And I think about, you know, a complex machine in the future to even get to a $20,000 bill of materials, let alone a street price, for me seems a little bit fantastical.
I think some of the AMRs like Locust are probably at 10 or under in terms of, but like, if you look at in like, you know, who knows how much markups there and in terms of like NRE of people and everything else. But I would say when we look at the BOM at a very high level, the bill of materials, there's roughly about 1,000 pieces in the robot. Yep. And as we get to higher volume manufacturing and we're doing, whether it's through plastics or we're looking at this in terms of sheet metal stamping or injection molding, like the prices of the structure itself and the amount of pieces will come down substantially. But what's this called? An order of 1,000 pieces in the robot, plus all the actuation systems and everything else. And maybe a Tesla Model 3 might have like 10,000 parts. So the complexity here is ultimately far less. Like there's just a lot less things in there. The mass is, I think our mass is about 130 pounds. And you have like a 6,000 pound, you know, Model X or something like that, or, you know, 4,000 pound Model 3. So just ultimately, like we think at very high rates of manufacturing, the cost should cost less in a car. I think this question really comes down to like what manufacturing volumes are you looking at and what time? Because, you know, one of the most important trends the last 100 years in, you know, consumer electronics and automotive OEMs has been the experience curve. It's every doubling of manufacturing volumes that saw a 20 to 30% reduction in prices. And, you know, labor gets more like efficient. You get better purchasing power on supply chain. You basically, you know, you can amortize better the machines by making more volumes. Like there's just a lot of reasons why that has been the case. And it's been, you know, very high regression model over the last like 100 years. So the name of the game here is volumes. If you're doing like one-off robots like we're doing now here, they're like show cars. They cost a lot of money. They'll be done. They're all done by hand. They're all CNC'd parts. Like we'll never do that in high rate manufacturing. So it's like not comparable to look at the BOM cost today and say, what would that look at long-term? So I would say the nice thing about humanoids here is that it's one product that can do hopefully millions of applications. So the ability for us to manufacture these at high volumes. So, you know, you mentioned Optimus, but they said they're trying to put 10 or 20 billion on the planet. But like, let's say we're able to do, you know, car size volumes, and like the price of this should come down to, I would say, really affordable levels. And then to extent you have a leasing model or something on the back end, I think that makes it very attractive for folks. You know, you could pay low hundreds of dollars per month to basically have a humanoid in your home. I would say the cost of this doesn't really scare me. I would say our rough estimate is about half the cost will come from actuators, and then probably second most important cost will be compute. Besides that, there's really nothing in there that you look at from a subsystem perspective and say, oh, that's going to be really hard to get at low like a low dollars at high volumes. There's really no, there's no special, you know, metallic parts or things in there that you would look at and say that's going to be hard to scale to low cost.
Yeah, or $9,000 safety lasers from SICK.
I know you only have like 5 minutes, but can you take us through, right? So I'm just looking at the deck here, you know, 2024 target humanoids and pilot manufacturing for beta testing applications in warehouses. Can you like give us just an idea or an example application that you would target early on in the warehouse?
Yeah. So we've done a whole like analysis across many different areas of the physical labor market. We love the warehouse. We hired Bob Klunk, or this year who led, like, you know, was the SVP of operations at Geodis at one point. We have a whole team dedicated, like a solutions team dedicated to thinking about the warehouse. We bought our own warehouse management system that we're API into the robot. We have a warehouse built in our lab. We like the warehouse overall. We like the warehouse because it's an ability for us to get into market quick in a big way and then use that knowledge to scale up to more applications over time. So we think about this as like the first chapter in a book will be areas of warehousing, retail, manufacturing. Then over time, we want to be in many applications, even in consumer applications over time in the home. But this book is going to start with like labor force work in areas that are very constrained, in areas where there's like a huge amount of unemployment, which is what you're seeing in warehouses, and in areas where we can get any kind of like edge. In the warehouse, you have a whole management software system that knows what's going on every single moment in the warehouse that we can communicate with. It's an indoor environment, which really helps from like an IP rated hardware. There's no customers around in a warehouse. We're just next to employees. There's industry standards like in a warehouse that we basically look at, you know, as it relates to, you know, I guess you look at like, you know, R1508, R1506, or at least, you know, there's industry standards now for industrial mobile robots and safety requirements that we can like look at. It's not a perfect one-to-one because we're, you know, dynamically stable, like dynamically, like, you know, basically standing. And we basically have, you know, we have the ability to fall that a wheeled robot wouldn't have, things like this. But I would say for the most part, they're very, I would say very comparable. And there's a high interest on the warehousing groups to automate as much as possible for efficiency, for, you know, they're seeing a large amount of unemployment. They're seeing a large amount of employee attrition. So, you know, we're in deep conversations with a dozen groups right now. We're going to site visits every 2 weeks. And yeah, we're just ultimately really excited about this market. It's massive. And in some way, the warehouse is like this clearing area for the rest of the world. Like every object in the physical world comes through a warehouse at some point.
It's crazy.
Like, it's just a really interesting area for us to be in. That's really strange. There's a lot of objects moving through it. There's a lot of need to automate. So so far the conversations are going extremely well. And if you walked into our lab today, you'd basically see a full warehouse built end to end.
Oh, nice. I want to ask you one thing before you go. Again, very successful, right? With Vettery and Archer. You probably could have gone on to do anything that you wanted, right? With the experiences and some of the maybe financial liberties that you've built up for yourself. Like why this one? Like what specifically attracted you to do this? Again, no one's really ever done this. Maybe that's what it is, but what attracted you to build humanoid robots? I find that fascinating.
Yeah, I would say, you know, from my perspective, we have like a really big issue with an employment trends globally. Like we basically have a flat line of labor population. We need some sort of automation here to really help step in. It's going to become a really big issue over the next couple of decades. I have a feeling, you know, that humanoid robots can fill that void in a very significant way. I think it not only can be a very large business, I think it can positively affect a lot of lives. And yeah, I think ultimately this could be one of the largest businesses ever built. And I think we can make advances in AGI. I think we can make advances in the labor force. We can help do the work that humans just don't want to do today. When we walk in these warehouses, it's like there's a lot of work that nobody wants to do. It's very dangerous. It's very monotonous. It's boring. Yeah, our goal is to help fill that void and make a positive contribution to humanity. And I think there's probably no better industry than this, to be honest, that I'm more excited about. I think we can basically introduce a product in the next few years that can make substantial impact. And then we have a roadmap, hopefully over time, putting 10 billion humanoids on the planet. That'll take many, many decades. But I think there's a real chance that this can be done. And so we're working really hard to try to prove that we can do that.
Very cool.
Thanks again, Brett, for joining the show there. Mike, just any final takeaways from you? When do you think we'll get our first glimpses of Figure, the actual robot?
Well, I think first glimpses of it, hopefully within the next 6 months, it'd be nice to be able to have a chance to see it doing something without a harness on it. And I'm not saying that it has a harness on it. I'm just saying, see it physically walking here unharnessed would be awesome pretty quickly. But I think, you know, he was talking that they still have a bit of commercialization to finish here on their basic design and research. And again, that's what this funding should help them get through that window. And, you know, Steve, I mean, folks like Brent, very, very confident in what they're doing, looking for challenging new problems. And, you know, one of the things he's just coming off of with Archer, you know, human mobility, electric, human-sized drones, essentially, right? Just think about what we've watched in the last 5 years, you know, from standard drones to now these large size vehicles that are all electric, you know, vertical takeoff and landing electric vehicles. You know, think about it, the commercialization process, you know, 5 years ago, we thought that was still a pipe dream, and look what's happened there. Now it's just a matter of getting over some regulatory hurdles to make those feasible, but the technology is solved, right? So different problem here. And Brent's the kind of guy I take away that likes to solve these challenging problems.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear Brent talk about he couldn't believe nobody's done this yet. Nobody's solved this yet. And when you hear it from that perspective, you know, it's, again, nobody's really had the funding runway to do this. And again, Agility has it now. Figure has it now. I'm not sure where some of the other companies stand. There's, you know, Aptronic is one of them. Sanctuary is another one that just came out with their first humanoid robot. But you're starting to see the financial aspect of this come together to give these companies, what, a 2-year window perhaps to make some headway, maybe make some of those initial milestones to gain some additional funding to maybe go down the commercial deployment path. But I think he's right. I think no one's really given this, again, Agility is doing it now, but other than that, no one's really given it a shot as far as focusing in on commercializing, productizing a humanoid robot to solve some sort of task. And again, they throw the word general purpose out there. Some other companies are throwing out the term general purpose. What I like to hear from Brett in that conversation that we just had is that they are starting small. They know that general purpose stuff, if it's ever possible, it's very, very far down the road. Mm-hmm. And they are starting small, right? They're starting with, you know, perhaps a task here, a task there inside of the warehouse, because there are standards, there is protocol, there are policies in place that can sort of help guide the development and deployment of what it is that they're trying to do. But also, very interesting fact, Mike, located right down the street, essentially, from where Robo Business is going to be located in Santa Clara. So maybe I'll try to set up a little visit.
No, that would be nice. Yeah.
They're humanoid.
That would be a great little event if we could set that up.
Yeah, absolutely. But thanks again to Brett Adcock. He's the CEO and co-founder of Figure, for coming on to the show this week. Really appreciate it. That's going to do it, folks, for the show. Before we go, again, call for presentations is open for Robo Business. Takes place October 18th and 19th at the Santa Clara Convention Center out in Santa Clara, California. This is a robotics development show, just like the Robotics Summit out in Boston. We're going to be focusing a little bit more on some startup stuff, investment, how to run a startup, but we'll be heavy on the technology aspect of things as well. We'll also be focusing in on the development of field robotics systems in our field robotics engineering forum. So if you're developing systems that are designed to operate in outdoor dynamic environments and you think that you can share some your expertise and help democratize that aspect of this industry, we'd love to hear from you. Or if you're just doing great stuff in the general robotics industry, we'd love to hear from you as well. So you can enter your chance to speak at the show. Just go to robobusiness.com. The deadline to enter is June 16th. Again, any questions, feel free to reach out to Mike or myself, and happy to answer those questions for you. Hope to see you guys all there. And again, that's going to do it, folks, for episode 115 of the Robot Report podcast. Thanks again to all you folks for tuning into the show. New episodes of the podcast drop each week. You can find us anywhere you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe, leave us a rating, give us a review. If you see Mike and I at Automate this week, or Brianna, make sure you stop us, say hello. We'd love to talk to you. So on behalf of Mike Oitzman and the entire team, I'm Steve Crow. Thanks again, folks, for tuning in. We'll talk to you again soon.